Hello and welcome to At The Table with Gail. I'm Peter Fleming and it's my job just to be bottle washer and do the washing up. And also to introduce, of course, Gail, star of the show. Hello, Gail.
Hello. Well, listeners, I've been having a little nibble here while sitting at the table, I suppose you could say at the desk. But Peter has brought in some beautiful stuff to try. And what are they called again?
It's a long one. You never remember it. They're the chewy ginger nut biscuits with brown sugar buttercream frosting.
Oh. Wow, yes. Well, we won't remember all that, but I've just had a bite of one, and honestly, they are huge. Now, I could just about eat that for lunch. It's so big. I couldn't believe it when he brought them in at dinner. I went, my goodness, look at those. A giant could eat one of those. But Peter might be able to let us in on a couple of little cooking tips there.
Well, I will, because, this is for once, I stuck strictly to the recipe, which is a bit unusual for me.
Good man.
So the recipe that you gave out, it all worked fine, and you end up with this rather sticky dough, which you put in the fridge and cool so it becomes a bit more usable. My only tip is that in here they say that you roll tablespoons of mixture into balls and roll in raw sugar. Well, I'd suggest dessert spoon. You've just heard what Gail's had to say. And I would also suggest that having rolled them a bit smaller, when you put them on the baking tray, I'd think flatten them down a bit.
Right.
Because the idea is at the end, as you can see, you stick them together with this buttercream frosting. Well, they're the size of cricket balls, aren't they? But otherwise,
I was trying to think of what I could compare with them, and you hit the nail on the head there, Peter.
They might be just as good as cricket ball. And the only other thing is, yes, I cooked them for 20 minutes, as it says on here. I did 160 fan. Keep your eye on them, but they cracked lovely on the top. They do look swell.
Oh, they do look.
They say chewy. I don't know if mine are chewy, but they're certainly nicer. They're certainly edible. And possibly a little touch more, 1.5 teaspoons ground ginger. You could possibly put a little bit more in. But if you stick to the recipe, it'll be fine.
Well, I think the ginger's the right amount. I mean, I like ginger, but that is just great. And I do agree with you, Peter, that maybe you could do a dessert spoon because you wouldn't want to give one of those to a child.
Well, you wouldn't. That's for sure. I thought they might just melt and flatten out more on their own.
Yeah,
but
right.
In fact, the photograph you showed me last week was very similar to those.
Very similar.
Cricket balls.
Almost the same. Yes. Yeah, exactly. So yeah. How many did you get out of that recipe?
I got 12.
Oh, wow. Well,
I got 13 halves.
Oh, okay,
right,
13
so
halves.
I think you could certainly aim for 16, if not not 18
I think
halves.
So. Yeah,
and then,
exactly.
And flatten them a bit, they'd be much more edible.
No, yes, you could open your mouth wide, actually, when you bite one of these. But absolutely lovely. Thank you, Peter, for that sample. I can tell you it won't go to waste.
And while we're on the Mutual Admiration Society, Gail brought in an apricot and walnut rougelash slice.
That's correct,
yes. Was that last week we did that?
I'm not sure, to be quite honest. I'm not sure how far ahead we are.
I think it's the week before. Anyway, it's somewhere there on the website or somewhere. The apricot and walnut rougelash slice. We discussed this at the time because the pastry is plain flour, a bit of salt, butter, cream cheese. And we were a bit raised. That's where we were raising. I was raising my Roger Moore eyebrow.
But I must admit, you know, like, I mean, this is actually a really lovely slice. And I did exactly, as Peter said, the recipe. And I found that that is truly a very rich pastry. And my feeling is, I mean, it's lovely and I'd make it again. But I think you could get away with actually having a sweet short crust pastry with using exactly the ingredients, doing exactly what they say at the end with the brushing of the egg yolk and the water, and then just smothering it like I did with raw sugar, put a lot of raw sugar over it, and bake it. But for 40 minutes, I think I gave it about 50 because it's only at 160. And so I think you could get away with it, but the taste is really nice. And Peter, I notice Peter's taken a bite out of it, so I'll wait for his comment.
Well, my feedback is it's lovely. It's a really nice fruity slice, and because it's a fairly moist filling, presumably, when you put it in, it's soaked a bit into the pastry.
Yes.
We're quite happy with soggy bottoms. No, it's not that. It's not. Really nice. And I tell you what I was going to mention, it's not too sweet. Quite very pleasant to eat. A super thing is to have fingers to pick off a plate.
I actually, with the apricot jam on the base before you put the filling on, there's not a lot of sugar in it, to be quite honest. And but I think the richness of the cream cheese and the pastry and everything really complements it having that extra
jolly
sugar.
Well, an excellent thing, because that's what I was going to say. We don't eat a lot of puds and sweets and cakes at home. I very rarely make them, but I thought this time I'm horrified when the amount of sugar and butter you put in. You're slicing great slabs of butter off and cupfuls of sugar and gee.
But it's according to the richness, like that 250 grams of butter, I kept weighing it and thinking, I'm sure this must be more than 250, but it wasn't. And the cream cheese, of course,
the same, Gail. You keep slicing bits off the block of butter. Yeah. That's got to be, what, it still isn't enough.
Oh, that's right, exactly. And it's like you say, when you did mix it, it said you will see little blobs of butter in the pastry, like when I mixed it, when you got it together, you could see you could still see some butter. And I thought, should I blend that a bit more? No, it said that you'd probably see bits of butter. So, and then I just cut it in half, wrapped it in Glad wrap, stuck it in the fridge and got on with it.
So it's a touch of rough puff.
Yeah, rough puff.
Well, this is if you've got lumps of butter in it, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So that's us. That's our baking experience for the week.
So if you're listening, thumbs up to both of those.
Yeah, exactly. But this time we're going to start off nothing sweet, actually. We've got Greek-style mini meatloaves. And this look really nice because you can bake them in your big muffin pans, the big grandpa ones, as I call them. I think there's probably a name for them. Texas muffins, that's right. And so you start off with 750 grams of minced lamb, one medium red onion chopped finely, quarter of a cup of finely chopped fresh oregano. Now, I think I've made a note, Peter, that if you haven't got that, you could probably use 1.5 teaspoons of dried.
That's a good tip, isn't
it? Yeah, because not everybody's got fresh oregano leaves. 1 tablespoon of finely grated lemon rind, 2 cloves of garlic crushed, 1/2 cup of dried breadcrumbs, 1 egg beaten lightly, 3 medium ripe tomatoes, 120 grams of feta, coarsely crumbled, and 1/3 cup of pitted olives halved. Now, that can be an olive of your choice, of course, but I think they've actually suggested Kalamata, is it? Kalamata.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, if you've got olives and you're using, just use those. 1/4 cup of extra of olive oil. And there we are. We've got our recipe. So we're going to move on now to the method. Now, you're preheating your oven to 220 degrees Celsius, quite high, and liberally grease a 6-hole non-stick Texas muffin pan. Now, we can't always guarantee that it's non-stick, so I'd be inclined just to put a little round of baking paper in the bottom of those Texas muffin pans. Combine the mince, onion, oregano, lemon, garlic breadcrumbs and egg in a large bowl. Season well with sea salt flakes and freshly ground black pepper. Press 1/2 the mixture into the greased pan holes. Cut the tomatoes into 18 slices. Select 6 large tomato slices and place on top of the mince with 1/2 the feta and olives. Top with the remaining mince and press mixture down so that you're sort of joining it together. Top meatloaves with the remaining slices of tomato, feta and olives and drizzle that extra oil, 2 teaspoons of oil over each, just spread it out between the 6. Now we've got potatoes that you can actually have this. With this, they said, while you're cooking your meatloaves, you can throw some potatoes in and make to be potatoes. But I didn't really, need to mention that, because you can have it with mashed potatoes or whatever you like. So what we're doing is putting your meat loaves in the oven and bake for 25 minutes or until the meat loaves are cooked through, and remove the meat loaves from the oven and run a small knife around the edge of each meat loaf and transfer to the plates. And these look really good, and they are good. If you want to prepare something in advance, these are great for doing that in advance. And these are really great for freezing. And I have got a little wee diagram in here.
And I'm looking at it. Oh, they do look nice. Now, look, I'll let you into a little something on this one.
Yes.
Because my wife likes to look at these recipes, and it came through. She said, oh, I made those once.
Oh, what, the Greek salmon?
Yes,
oh.
Yes, and she dug the recipe out. It was virtually identical. She met us about 3 years ago. She cooks for the hospice for the volunteers.
Oh, right.
Sort of once or twice a month or something. So right. It's often difficult to get stuff that some of the day patients
yes.
can all eat because of everything. Because she remembers this one because she bought the lamb and it was a bit expensive. She got told off.
Oh, okay. Well,
but she said
yes.
they were very, very, very nice.
Oh, good.
Simple. It sounded really good.
Well, I think with the tomato, I think it's very decorative and very nice. I mean, one of those with a bit of mashed potato and a bit of salad, absolutely ample. Is there as big as your ginger biscuits? It would definitely be. We're not going to get away from that, listeners. That they would definitely be absolutely sufficient. But they do look nice, and it's probably something I might like to try. But I'm not sure whether I'll round to bringing one in.
I'm going to persuade you to try it.
But oh, are you?
I'll tell you why at the end of the program.
Oh, okay, right. So that's our Greek style mini meat loaves, and look impressive. Now, I'm going to move on because I thought this was actually quite nice, and I like the idea what they did with their naan breads. So it appealed to me when I read this. So we're going to start off, and it's carrot and macadamia hummus. So we've got 6 carrots peeled, cut into chunks, 1/3 cup of macadamias, 3 garlic cloves peeled, 1/3 cup of olive oil, a 280-gram packet of naan, 400 grams can of chickpeas rinsed and drained, 2 tablespoons of tahini, 1 lemon grated zest and the juice, 1/4 cup of water, and, of course, a bit of a salad to serve. So we're moving on to the method. Preheat the oven to 180 degrees Celsius. Line 3 oven trays with baking paper. When I saw that, line 3 baking papers, why are we lining 3 baking papers, trays with baking paper? So you'll hear this why. Toss the carrot, macadamias, garlic, and 1 tablespoon of the oil on 1 tray. Season and roast for 20 minutes. Cover with foil and roast for another 10 or 15 minutes more, until the carrots are tender. Roast carrots tend to take a little bit longer. And if they're in, you know, sort of smaller chunks, just monitor that. Remove and cool. Using a 5-centimeter star cutter, cut stars from the naan. Arrange on the remaining trays, that's why there were so many trays, spray with oil and bake for 12 to 15 minutes until crisp, and then cool. In a food processor, pulse the carrot mixture with the chickpeas, tahini, zest, juice and water until smooth, season and serve with the star crostini and salad. And there you are. And I just thought this looks lovely on a dish. And this is what appealed to me, Peter, the little stars they made out of the naan bread.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought that was a great idea.
And hummus is so nice, isn't it?
Yeah, I love hummus. Mm. So I just thought it was rather nice.
Good one.
And if anything, it might be that I might have to try. Because then if I drain the chickpeas.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
You could whiz it up and make some froth.
Whiz it up and make something out of that too
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, that's true. We've got to do that one
but
of these
that, days. But that sort of looks really nice. And I love carrots. And mind you, I had trouble trying to get macadamias the other day to make a dish. And so I replaced it with walnuts. So I probably need to have a good look round.
Well, yeah, why not? Yeah.
Mm. So that's our first.
That's our
part
first
of the show.
Two. And, yes. Right. So now that last week we started a bit of a precedent because we had a bit of a dance to the music.
Oh yeah.
We pushed the table.
Oh, okay. Yes, we did. We cleared the table. Yes.
Well, in honour of your first recipe, which is the Greek style mini loaves, on your feet, arms out, and we're going to do a bit of Zorba.
Oh, my goodness me! Clear the table.
Gosh, that was a good one, Gareth.
Oh, so tired.
If you heard the crackling, that was my knees, I'm afraid. And I told you, no smashing plates on the floor.
Well, I had the castanets. What else could I do?
Look at the mess you've made. Right, let's get on back to cooking.
Right. So I looked at this and I said to Peter, I don't think we've actually had an air fryer recipe over the, over the wires. So I saw this and it's salmon and potato croquettes. And I thought this would be really good because a lot of people do have these air fryers in their pantry and a lot of people I know swear by them. They just love them. So we're going to start off with one large floury potato peeled and chopped, a 450-gram can of red salmon drained and bones removed, one egg lightly beaten, 2 tablespoons of aioli or mayonnaise, whichever you prefer, 1/2 cup of grated mozzarella, 1 tablespoon of horseradish cream. Now, I was curious about this because I don't think horseradish cream is what somebody might have in their cupboards, Peter. So I looked that up and I thought, now what can we replace that with? And apparently you can replace it with Dijon mustard.
That sounds like a good idea, because I would have. It sounds like an awful lot of horseradish cream if you end up using something much stronger.
Mm-hmm.
A tablespoon.
Exactly. And I just sort of think, well, is it something that you have in your pantry? And if you're only going to use a tablespoon, why would you go out and buy it? You know, so there you are. And most people have mustard, whether it's Dijon or not, I don't know. But that's a good replacement if you want to use it.
Good idea.
4 spring onions, finely chopped. 2 tablespoons of chopped capers. 2 dill pickles, finely chopped. 1 tablespoon of lemon juice, 2 teaspoons of lemon rind. Now, it says 1 3/4 cups of panko crumbs. Well, I tend to actually make my own breadcrumbs, so I just use whatever you've got. But I do. I just stick them in the whiz and I use, you know, some bread. And we also need olive oil for drizzling and maybe rocket and sliced avocado to accompany it. So what we're going to do is preheat the air fryer to 180 degrees Celsius in a medium saucepan of boiling salted water. Cook potato. Now, is that because, can I just look? Oh, yeah, cook the potato until it's tender. Drain. Transfer to a large bowl and mash while hot and cool slightly. Stir in salmon, egg, aioli, cheese, horseradish, or your Dijon mustard, onion, capers, pickles, juice, rind, and 1/2 cup of the breadcrumbs. Roll 2 tablespoons of mixture into croquettes. Repeat with the rest of the mixture. Roll croquettes and remaining breadcrumbs to lightly coat and drizzle generously with olive oil. Place 1/2 the croquettes in the air fryer basket. Cook for 12 minutes, turning once or until golden, and repeat that with the remaining croquettes. And as I say, you know, you can serve that with a nice salad. But basically, depending on what size your air fryer is, because I think there is actually a couple of sizes. So you can get a large and or a medium. So you'll just have to just put them in so that they need a little bit of air between them. You know, don't crush them in. But I just thought, oh, well, that's a nice recipe for someone that's, you know, wants to use their air fryer.
Yeah, they look fine. I mean, sure, you could just fry these in a frying pan, but of course you could.
Well, you could. Yeah, of course you could.
Yeah. I mean, the ingredients sound good, no?
Mm. And I think with the air fryer, I think it's a sort of No Mess Charlie, isn't it, really?
Yeah, possibly. Yeah.
I think they have a drip tray.
What did you say?
A No Mess Charlie sort of job, you know, cooking.
Is it?
Well,
what's that mean?
Just a phrase.
Does it make a...
Sorry.
To you and on me.
Okay. And because I think they've got a drip tray underneath, so it can, you know, that excess oil can zip it.
Oh, just
so
drip it,
you
yeah.
sort of haven't got all that oil spattering over your stove. So maybe it's, you know, nice clean job. That might be better.
And when you're making a mixture like this and it says mash the potatoes while hot, do you remember what I suggested you get? A ricer.
Yes, I know.
Fabulous for this sort of thing because it comes out so light and easy to mix stuff in.
Yes, I know. But is that what they're called, a ricer?
A ricer.
Oh, yeah, okay. Let's look that one up.
Yeah, you should do.
I will. Because I know that you say it's really great. So today, look, we've sort of gone a bit international, haven't we, today? We've had Greek-style mini meatloaves, and we're now going to move on to Persian-inspired rice.
Yeah, I'm a bit interested to see this one.
Right, well, saffron threads. I must admit, Peter, I've never used that in a cooking dish. I haven't experienced saffron threads, so I don't even know how they come. I suppose they come in a packet.
They come in a tiny, tiny container because they're so expensive.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, terrifically expensive, but you only use 1 or 2 or 3 of them.
Yeah, I think it says a pinch here.
The stamens out of crocuses, you know.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. Yeah, and they're picked out individually, and they're jolly expensive. One of the most expensive foods, I think.
Wow. Well, that's interesting. I bet the listeners didn't know that.
But you only put a
Yeah, well, it says a pinch here, so, I mean, really a pinch.
That's all you could afford.
So, yeah, so, okay. Well, small pinch of saffron threads, 2 cups of basmati rice, 1 tablespoon of salt, 1 cup of natural yogurt, 2 egg yolks, 1/2 cup of sunflower oil, 2 tablespoons of melted butter, 1 small cauliflower cut into small florets. Now, I'm just going to break away here and say I bought a cauliflower for $4 yesterday, and it was massive.
Oh, they're back that size again. I mean, a cauliflower, fantastic value for money.
Absolutely. I mean, I've got enough there for about another 2 or 3 meals, but I just couldn't believe it when I saw them. They're huge. So there you are, 1 small cauliflower, but if you've got a large one, you could make, you know, do something else with it. 1/4 cup of olive oil, 1 tablespoon of lemon juice, 1 tablespoon of honey. Now, 1 tablespoon of pomegranate molasses. Now, I thought about this when I was going to sort of not give this recipe, because I thought, pomegranate molasses, how can we access that? So I thought, well, I'm going to look that up and see what we can actually substitute it with. And you can substitute with honey or maple syrup with lemon juice. And I think the pomegranate granite is sort of basic red, isn't it? So it gives a little bit of colour.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't, you can probably access it from a specialist shop, I should imagine.
Yeah, but if you come up with a simple alternative, just say that one
again. That's what I mean. I think with the honey or maple syrup with lemon juice, so just mix that together.
Okay.
Yeah. And that is your substitute, because I researched that one as well, because it almost put me off giving you the recipe, because we don't like people going out and sort of having to buy these special things.
Particularly on top of the saffron.
Well, yeah, pardon me, I didn't know about that little wee thing, but never mind, I'll remember that. And 1/2 cup of slivered almonds toasted, 1 cup of fresh dates, seeded and halved. Well, if you can't get fresh dates, I'm sure we can get a substitute with just buying dates. Anyhow, 2 cups of fresh parsley leaves. Now, that's all your ingredients for this beautiful, delicious Persian-inspired rice cake. Now, the method is to bloom the saffron, place in a small cup with 1 tablespoon of boiling water, and stand for 10 minutes. Now, can you explain that to me? Does that open it up to bloom it?
They're like little, they're just little, if you think of the stamen in the
middle
of a crocus, a little thin thing.
Yes, yes.
And they're a little bit dry. Yeah, so you just, this is standard, you put them in some boiling water.
Sort of swelling it a bit like gelatin.
They colour the water as much as anything.
Oh, okay. So place rice in a medium-sized sieve and rinse under cold water until the water runs clear. Bring a large pan of water to the boil, add salt, stir in the rinsed rice and cook for 5 minutes or until half cooked. Drain well and place into a large bowl. Now you're preheating the oven to 200 degrees Celsius. Whisk the yogurt, egg yolks, oil and saffron mixture in a medium bowl until smooth. Fold in the yogurt mixture into the rice, season with salt and freshly ground black pepper. Grease a 22-centimetre pie dish plate liberally with some of the butter. Place cauliflower and remaining butter on an oven tray, tossing to combine. Season with salt and freshly ground pepper. Press rice mixture evenly into the dish. Bake for 1 hour or until the base and edge are golden and crispy. At the same time as that's in the oven, but for not as long, bake the cauliflower for 30 minutes or until golden and just tender. To make the dressing, combine the olive oil, lemon juice, honey, and the pomegranate molasses in a screw-top jar, which you're going to replace anyway. The pomegranate molasses in a screw top jar, shaking well and seasoned to taste. Combine the cauliflower, almonds, dates and parsley leaves in a bowl. Drizzle over the dressing. Now you're standing the rice cake for 5 minutes before carefully flipping onto a large serving plate. Top with the date and parsley mixture. So for this dish, the rice cake is suitable to freeze, but, you know, for a later date. But this looks really, really nice and quite different. And I have got an illustration.
Oh, right. It's okay. Yep. Yep.
You know, I looked at, and you really, obviously, you have to really like rice, and which I do anyway. And I think it looks quite nice with the dates and the roasted cauliflower, etc. You know, poured all over it.
Well, I'm sticking my hand up. I'm going to make that.
Are you?
Well, I lived in Persia for a couple of years.
Of course, yes. Anyway, but you didn't make this on your
gas stove. Don't remember coming across this, so I'm going to catch up with it now. So,
wow.
Yeah, so I'm going to do that.
Well, what's my challenge? What's my challenge? Let me look at my challenge. Well, quick salmon. Well, let's have a look. I have got some feed. I could either make the carrot and macadamia hummus. Or, as you say, the Greek-style mini meatloaves, but that means I'll probably have to dance while I'm doing it. I'm not sure whether I can
you've
do
done
that.
You've done your dancing.
No, you? But anyway,
you decide.
Be surprised.
It would be a surprise, yes. Yeah. Right, better go.
We better go.
Taking a lot of time today because discussing all our successes in the kitchen.
That's right, yes.
And I'm losing my voice.
Oh, okay, right.
Right, we're off. Thank
well, it's
you,
been
Gail.
Nice.
Thank you for the dance.
Thank you.
Thank you for the rugelash slice.
Yes, and same here. You'll never eat a ginger nut from the supermarket again after you've eaten one of these. Okay, bye.
Bye, Gail.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.